really a great experience for me the last time I was here. We were in the town hall the last time in a beautiful building with perhaps a much bigger audience on that occasion. It was quite a big event over a longer period of time. And I met so many people, but also it was good to see how this community of Brunswick had engaged with learning and learning with disadvantaged adults, many of whom had made the long journey south from Europe and from Scotland and Ireland and further afield to a completely new world. But it was quite a revelation for me to walk around and see the pictures of all the kind of dancing and activities that were going on that I remember seeing pictures of my mother back in Belfast engaging in her youth, and to realise just how the culture had been brought and how people had developed a kind of way of living and learning that was a good basis for the development of adult learning in the community. I also remember I was saying to Barry that I remembered when we were driving up to Brunswick that I saw, and this is the only time I've ever seen this, I think, outside of Ireland, a big phrase, welcome to the community, in the Irish language in Brunswick. So it made me feel a little bit at home, thinking, you know, there is a Celtic connection here. One of the reasons I'm here, Helen mentioned my colleague Aileen Wendy Dunlop, who we'll speak to you later, and Aileen Wendy has really been involved in a project which she mentioned to POET, Pedagogies of Educational Transition, and we spent almost 2 weeks in New Zealand at the University of Waikato discussing a lot of things, but one particular area we were discussing was Indigenous education. And that was also a new beginning of a new journey for me, and you know, coming to Australia too and having to think about the issues of what Indigenous means in Australia and the kind of journey you have had in dealing with that issue, which is an ongoing journey and provides ongoing challenges for everyone. And as adult educators, we need those kind of challenges and we need problems to sort out. It would be very uninteresting if we had a world with no issues or no problems or felt that we'd sorted everything out. One of the areas that sort of developed in my thinking when I heard the Māori presentations in New Zealand was the whole area of the how we are as people and the different dimensions that we have. And Helen Marek, one of my colleagues from Strathclyde and myself, we had to talk about what it meant to be Indigenous in Scotland and in Ireland too. And we had to go back partly to our Celtic roots. It's not the only issue of being Indigenous in Scotland. And this morning Barry brought me up very early to Melbourne because we decided we wanted to make the most of the day. And we've had a lovely morning in the Botanic Gardens, but also, perhaps more importantly, visiting the War Memorial. This is my second time now in Melbourne, it's my third time, but I'd never been there before. And of course, it's a very nice time to visit there because Anzac Day is tomorrow, and we're preparing for that in our minds and our thoughts, remembering all the people from Australia and New Zealand that aren't with us, that, you know, perhaps give sacrifices that we as adult educators are still here. And I think it reminded me of the challenges that we have as adult educators too, to help build communities, because there are so many issues that we have to deal with. And you know, war and peace is one big issue that perhaps we don't, it confronts us maybe not exactly in relation to a world war, but it's there. And it's also a dimension of adult learning that we have to deal with. And if I may, I thought I would like to share some writing, a little few lines from the Celtic vision about humans and human being and living with you. It comes from Celtic spirituality, which you can interpret yourself in whatever way you want and however you want to be as a person and what you feel is your journey. It comes from the words of John Donoghue, who was the head of education at Trinity College Dublin, and who has written a lot on spiritual wisdom in the Celtic world. And these particular words that I would like to quote to you come from the book Anam Cara, which means soulmate in Celtic language. And it's called A Blessing of Solitude. It's just a few moments long, and I'll just ask you to think about the words as I read. May you recognize in your life the presence, power, and light of your soul. May you realize that you are never alone, that your soul is in brightness and belonging connects you intimately with the rhythm of the universe. May you have respect for your own individuality and difference. May you realize the shape of your soul is unique, that you have a special destiny here, that behind the facade of your life there is something beautiful, good, and eternal happening. May you learn to see yourself with the same delight, pride, and expectation with which God sees you in every moment. And that's from Anam Cara. Now, what I'd like to do is share with you, as Barry mentioned, I'm working in the Centre for Lifelong Learning in the University of Strathclyde. And the centre, one of the areas which we are very much involved in is older learning and development of programmes for older learning. And I'd like to share some of the what we're doing there, how the programmes are developing and some challenges we have. And maybe there might be some time for discussion at the end of the presentation or later on this afternoon. I think just, quickly to put context of where we are, you know that Scotland's that part in the very north here, up here, from about here onwards, it's about half the size of Britain, but it has a much smaller part of the population of the UK, about 5.5 million people. And most of those people live in this area between Glasgow and Edinburgh. There's about 2.5 million people in the Glasgow area, and about another 1.5 million in the Edinburgh area, the broader area. So most of the people in Scotland are living in the central belt. But obviously we have a lot of people right across Scotland who have educational needs, albeit smaller numbers, and that's a big challenge for us. I suppose in a similar way it would be in Australia on a bigger scale, that you have a lot of areas too where you have to try and meet need, and it can be challenging. And of course our history is very long, and this is a picture taken from the island of Harris in the Western Isles, and shows some standing stones going back to the Stone Age time, and reminder that our lands have been inhabited for a very long time. More recently, of course, the Highlands, the Eileen Dunham Castle, in relation to the whole time of the period of time. So another example of the rurality of Scotland and the sparsity of population. And then on to Glasgow, this is a picture of our city chambers, and of course Glasgow will be the host for the Commonwealth Games this July. And that's the first time that the Commonwealth Games will be in Glasgow. They have been in Scotland two other times, in Edinburgh. So we're all looking forward to that event, and I know that some Australians or many of you will be coming to visit. Some people on my trip already have been saying their tickets to come, and they're looking forward to coming. The Strathclyde University is located very close to the city chambers, just a few minutes walk away. And the Centre for Lifelong Learning is a centre located within the university on the seventh floor of a building. We have about 8,000 part-time students, which is a very large number of students, really, with considering we have only about 15 full-time staff, but a couple of hundred part-time staff teaching many different programs. Our work is divided into two broad areas. One is knowledge exchange, which we call knowledge exchange, and that's largely our professional development programs, which we deliver from certificate right up to master's level. And then we have our community engagement area, which is again a very large area of our program, with mainly short courses for people in the community and all different groups within the community. And also we do some training of educators too, of adult educators. And again, we're operating that from certificate level. We're just introducing building into a master's program for people in the training area. And then we have some access programs that encourage people from disadvantaged areas to come to the university. We work with schools in the summertime through a summer program where people from disadvantaged areas of the west of Scotland come to short courses over the summertime, and based on their results and their hires, plus coming to the summer school, they can be admitted to the university with a slightly varied type of level of qualification. Many of the areas of the university are science and engineering areas, so our summer school does have a strong focus on scientific subjects. But we also have year-long access courses in humanities and arts, where we're preparing people who don't have hires to get access to degree programs using an alternative route, where they don't have to have the normal school qualification to come to the university. And those are very successful too. They also exist at many other universities. Glasgow University, the other big university in Glasgow, has similar programs. And then we have a lot of projects. Some are funded by the City Council, some by the Scottish Education Department, and a number from the European Union too. The European funding has been increasingly very helpful for us to reaching the most disadvantaged people. European policy in education is geared very much towards supporting additionality in education, trying to provide for things that aren't there, but also to encourage sharing of experience across Europe, and projects which bring students together across the different countries. We're many countries and many cultures, and so that's been particularly rewarding, and I think we've been particularly successful at Strathclyde in getting these projects over many years. And then we've also been building up our research and consultancy work in recent years. And I'm going to talk about that in a minute, about how we've involved our students in research. But I said that, I mean, today mainly I'm here to talk to you about ageing and how we're dealing with ageing. And of course, this is a big challenge for us, you know, in Scotland, because the number of people that are in the older age range is going up all the time. You know, in the case in Europe as well, it's an issue in most European countries, not all, but most have an ageing population. And so we have to think ahead to how we provide for the needs of increasing numbers of people over 50 who can go back into the workforce, either in a paid capacity or in voluntary capacity. And the kind of challenges that we have to think about in terms of provision across a whole range of domains. There's the issue of how to help people live healthy lifestyles and to live longer, and so some programs are focused on that, whether it be, you know, programs of physical education or how to keep healthy, but also it can be sometimes part of our training programs for people going back into the workforce, and also to train employers to think about providing, you know, healthy environments for older people to work in, and to be aware of the needs of older people. But we also have to do a lot of work, I think, with changing people's attitudes about older people and how their contribution they can make. I remember 2 years back, I was in Canada at a conference, probably about 4 or 5 years ago now, and I remember one of the speakers talking about this issue of ageing, and she was actually from the USA, and she talked about how at the time when there was a skills shortage, that the newspapers were reporting on how the older people could make up for the skills shortages. She said that a few years later, when the recession came, the dialogue was changing to sort of indicating, well, older people, they're a burden. How do we meet this need and the cost? We don't have the funding to provide programs for them, that the funding should be for younger people. So things can change very quickly, and attitudes. And I think that we have a lot still to do in encouraging people to realise that being older isn't a disadvantage. It isn't a disadvantage for the individual, nor is it for the society, that older people have an awful lot to contribute. And I think, you know, some of what we talk about in intergenerational learning today shows how older people can give back a lot to society. So we need to find ways of encouraging older people to be able to make those contributions. And that can be in so many ways. One way is through paid work, but many of the older people are content to be in retirement, but to make a voluntary contribution, whether it's through volunteering in the field of education or in caring professions, or supporting people in so many different ways as citizens. There's the figures in Scotland, which are really quite startling. By 2031, the number of people over 50 will rise by 28%, and by 75% for the over 75s. So when we talk about older learning, traditionally we talk about third ages over 50, but more and more we have to break that down, because it's such a wide range of people who will be living from 50s to their 90s. My aunt, who came to Australia in the 1950s, is now 94, and living in Wollongong, and still quite sprite and able. And I think I've got about another three aunts in Ireland in their 90s, who are all involved in quite a lot of different activities. So we do have to think about how older people can make a contribution. Truly, the lifelong learning process is from birth to death, or womb to tomb, or whatever we want to call it. We have to look at the whole lifespan, and we have to think, you know, about how to support people to live healthily and their well-being. And there again, you can see in Scotland just how statistically the percentage of older people over 75 is really going to rise quite sharply. There has been some research into older learning, but not very much in the UK. And maybe one study recently was the study on learning and well-being in England, where the study looked at the trajectories of older adults' learning over a period of time. There is some debate about whether or not learning actually improves the quality of life and people's well-being, but in the case of the study, certainly the overall conclusion was that informal learning does contribute to overall well-being, and that where people can contribute, can learn in a whole variety of contexts. And a lot of the learning for older learning is in social contexts, where they learn through arts and sport and exercise, music, and all of these things are very valuable to older people, particularly people coming out of the workforce. The need for having more qualifications is a debatable point for older learners. Some people argue that older people aren't looking for qualifications, but other people argue that that's the very thing they do want. So I think that's an issue in the debate. This study also found that the older people who engaged in learning, hardly surprisingly, were largely women. that there are fewer men engaging in learning as the people got older. And of course the book that Barry and I and Annette here in the front have been editing, which we'll be talking about later, partly addresses some of those issues on how to engage men in learning. So, back to the centre and, you know, what we are doing there. Most of what we are doing in the learning in later life is around short courses for older learning. And even in our centre, the majority of people are female that comes to classes. But we also have a student association attached to our centre, and people pay a small fee to join the association. And 900 of our students pay that fee, and from that fee they get access to a whole range of additional activities. One is the sports facilities of the university, which becomes available to them in the same way as younger students. And many of them take up the opportunities to use the swimming pool and exercise facilities informally, and that's a great benefit to many of the older people at a fairly reduced cost. But also we have set up a range of clubs for older people in very many different activities. There are many different language clubs, from Italian language and culture, French, German, Spanish, but also other activities like music and current affairs, drama, those kinds of things. And more recently we set up a research association with the older people, and they are researching different topics within the centre, things that will support our development of our programmes. For example, how successful are our programmes, what do people want. They produced a history of the Students Association and the Centre for Learning and Later Life programme, which has run for 25 years. And they're currently engaged in another project, which I think Aline Wendy may mention to you, about looking at how older people can link in with younger children. I'll not say anything more about that at the moment. And they also are involved in a lot of volunteer activities, from tour guiding to computer buddies to going to the hospital and helping people with spinal injuries help with their learning, to showing people around the university. And we have some programs where they get support to get back into work, to thinking about, you know, how they can move back into work if they're looking for an alternative type of employment. One of the things we've been doing recently with Dublin University and Arizona State University is trying to look at what are the basis within the university, the kind of broad principles that universities should be aspiring to in terms of encouraging older people into learning. Now, I just quickly want to show you what we've come up with here. This is a conference that we had at the end of last year in Dublin, and the Prime Minister attended, the Taoiseach in Ireland attended the conference when we were presenting our findings on, we felt, with the principles that universities should adopt. And I'm pleased to say that Strathclyde University has adopted these principles. The next stage is how to put these into practice, and we're currently doing some research on that, and we were having a seminar in June with senior people in the university to look at how we can move that forward. Principles aren't so surprising in many ways, you know. Things like encouraging older adults to get involved in core activities in the university, not just in set activities in the Centre for Lifelong Learning, but that they should be able to go to all the types of programmes within the university. That we should, they should be encouraged to develop new careers, and to that the university should become more aware of the width of the educational needs of older learners. I told you about all the short courses we have, but not so many older students are studying at doctoral level, for example. Yet in America we know that huge numbers of older people are making a significant contribution through research, through doctoral research, to pushing forward the frontiers of adult learning. intergenerational learning and how we can promote that within the university. Dublin City University have done a lot of work on that through encouraging students and older people to bring in photographs and share ideas, and this has been built into the teaching programs. Online education, expansion of online education. In the Centre for Lifelong Learning, we have programs in genealogy up to master's level, and we have students now enrolling right across the world on those programs. Promoting more research about learning for older people, and that will draw us in not only to looking at educational issues, but working with colleagues in health and in other areas within the university, some of the scientific areas that are doing research and psychology and brain research, and what's the contribution that we can make in bringing forward the whole research agenda in older learning, and encouraging people to get more involved in universities, to be more aware about health and wellness and arts, cultural activities, and to meeting the needs of the university's own retired community. We do acknowledge that people who are professors within the university can return as emeritus professor in the university, but there are many other staff who work at the university who have maybe want to come back and make contributions. And in the Learning and Later Life Student Association, we have a number of people who have done a whole lot of range of activities within Strathclyde, and that needs to be looked at more fully and expanded. So there needs to be a lot more dialogue. So those are the kind of broad principles that we've come up with. And more recently, the Scottish Parliament has taken an interest in older learning. And this is a meeting that I attended a few weeks ago, an inter-party group, which is really asked us to come along because of the book that we had published on men's learning, to present some of the findings and what the book was saying about the needs in to develop old learning in that area. And some of the people who came along were actually learners from various groups in Scotland. And I think this is quite innovative in a way that the politicians take an interest. It's not just a matter for the people in the policy areas within the departments to try and work out the solutions, but that the politicians keep themselves informed. And I think if you have a cross-party group, then you have more chance of bringing the whole agenda forward together, rather than one party agreeing one thing and another then trying to undo what the previous party did when they get into power. So these learning partnerships, which have been developed in Scotland, are, I think, very innovative, bringing together people, you know, right across the field of adult learning, with a shared commitment to social justice and to how to develop learning linked to experience and to what various people have to say. And are practitioner-led as well, to take account of people working in the field feel and the contribution that they would like to add to the development of learning. And just finally, I'd like to mention where we are with adult learning in Scotland at the minute. A couple of years ago, people from the community learning sector in Scotland decided to get together to discuss what it means for the future of adult learning in Scotland. What would we like to state, what way we think it should go in the future. And we're currently working on the statement of ambition, which is based on the core principles of, you know, learning is lifelong, life-wide, and learner-centred, which I'm pretty certain most of you in this room know a lot about. And, you know, this perhaps diagrammatically shows the kind of different dimensions that the statement's working in. The whole area of personal development and personal life, which has always been very well recognised in Scotland, though of course does come under pressure when resources are there and we tend to be more focused on the work-life dimension and encouraging people into work or to see their contribution in that sphere of influence. But also family life, I think, is coming to the fore again in a new kind of way, family broadly defined, And community, the importance of communities in life in Scotland, whether it be in the rural communities or in the urban areas, and how to bring people together to learn in communities. And I think that perhaps the new dimension in this kind of, or one of the new areas, is the notion of internationalism. And that's partly about helping adult learners to think globally, not just locally. Locally is important, that adult learners have to think locally to solve problems. But we've grown to a more interconnected world, which we know about through television and through travel, and we have to learn through people coming, moving about and coming to live in our country. Scotland's a very multicultural country with many different nationalities living there. People have to engage in an international community. So that's a new dimension of this. So I think, you know, if I could just finish off by saying that I think we are becoming more positive towards our attitude to ageing. We've come a long way, and I think that there's still a lot to do, and there are new challenges. And we have to keep in mind, you know, lifelong learning and what it means to be a learner, an older learner, and keep that at the centre of our vision, so that we don't allow ourselves to become skewed to the front-end model of school education or youth, or, you know, people up to 30 and then after 30 nobody cares, as it were. It's got to be a truly lifelong learning vision, and I'm pretty confident that that's what's at the heart of our policy thinking and our political motives in Scotland. How we bring that into practice and continue to keep it moving along in that line is another question. I think we're at least moving in the right direction. Thank you very much for listening.